You're with Sean Jung and Where the Veil Grows Thin, an exploration of the sacred moments of our human experience in life and death, joy and sorrow, birth and end of life. It's the unscripted instant when the heart opens, the face-to-face moments with the divine.
In hindsight, I suppose I should have known last night when I was feeling so out of sorts that illness might have been playing a part. I couldn't get warm. I was agitated. I was short-tempered. In hindsight, turning to the wonder drug that my friend Marnie brought into my life about a year ago, sooner than this morning, would have been smart. But I have turned to it now, and I'm already feeling more aligned with my higher and truer self. In hindsight, I can usually see just about everything I've ever done that I could have done better, but only because I am then aware of the outcome. Hindsight has such an unfair advantage. When I offered parenting classes, I used to use the analogy of squeeze the tube slowly, because once the toothpaste is out, it's really hard to get it back in, as a way to caution us as parents to think before we speak or act. And even that suggestion was born of hindsight, having seen firsthand how damaging words said in frustration or anger or even in ignorance can be in the life of a young child. I won't say that I wish I'd parented different, because I absolutely love and adore who my daughter is. But I will say that there have been many moments in my life when I know I could have been kinder, both to myself and to others, and my daughter is included in that. I suppose hindsight is one of those things in life that we can apply moving forward to help us do things better. But it can also be one of those things that haunts us, especially when it swirls around in the grief that comes as a result of losing a beloved. Someone we love dies, and in almost no time we find ourselves second-guessing decisions made and actions taken in our relationship with them. It's true that when studied, identified, processed, and internalized, we can move forward and take whatever we've learned through those painful lessons and loss, and perhaps remember how to avoid having to learn them all over again the next time we face significant loss. I would imagine most of us can remember feeling regret as part of trying to right ourselves after a rogue wave has knocked us off kilter in loss. And many of us can probably also remember a time when we may have shared those feelings with someone just to be told all the reasons why we shouldn't feel that way, which can make us angry, resentful, and even more confused. It's a fine line, that sweet spot of growth when we can identify how we wish we'd behaved differently with someone who was dying and do it in a way that doesn't become cause for self-loathing, but a tool for growth and understanding how we might do it differently next time. I think when we spend as much time in the trade of death and dying as I have, that the goal in being there is to, whenever possible, help create more peace or a stronger sense for the one leaving of having been seen in their life right up until the moment they cross the veil. So we can always hope for these two things, that we get another opportunity, and that when we do, we remember what we learned last time. It has truly been one of the sweetest rewards in surviving loss. Those of us who choose to honor grief know quite well that there are no rewards for speed. And we also know, as each opportunity teaches us, that we can learn to be more finely tuned to our own needs and to the needs of others when we find ourselves navigating loss. I have had the good fortune of surviving many personal losses and having been entrusted and invited by others to companion them in theirs. So I have had more than your average share of hearing the woulda, coulda, shouldas that only hindsight can bring. There's a place for them in the process of regrounding ourselves in loss. Sometimes we make the mistake of thinking too much, trying to process it all too quickly, asking ourselves too soon what we might have learned or gained in an experience of loss. Maybe we jump to the regrets because it's a way to not focus on the real issue at hand, which is sadness. It's much easier to just start beating ourselves up for all the things we did or didn't do that we wish we had or hadn't done. Honoring grief well requires of us, among other things, that we are willing to be in stillness. We can dance our way through what feel like rough days with lots of busyness and doing, and our grief will wait. A dear friend once described grief to me as a beautiful deep pool of water, like a high mountain lake that just waits patiently for her to dip in a toe or dive headfirst into its depths, on her terms. That it's just there. And when she feels ready, she can go to it. And it isn't always that way, though, is it? There are also those days when it rushes under us like a flash flood. Those days we never even see it coming, when it lifts us off our very foundation, depositing us where we know no one, where we can't understand the language, and where we wonder if we will ever find our way home. The father of a 16-year-old daughter who was killed when one front wheel of the car she was driving fell off the edge of the road, taking her end over end into a ravine. He described his grief as feeling like he was rafting the Grand Canyon at high runoff in a boat with no oars and no life jacket, being bruised and battered against the canyon walls, and all he could do was hang on and try not to die himself. In group work, we talk about the benefit in learning to ride the waves, learning to keep our heads above water. If you have ever been sucked under by a wave and penned against the sand, you know the feeling of panic and fear that comes over you. And it's that way in grief, learning to surf, learning to hang 10, to maintain a connection to your board, all become metaphors in my grief groups. And when the group is a circle of women elders, most of whom have lived their entire lives on ranches in the mountains of Colorado, these metaphors usually bring a fair amount of laughter. And trust me, to hear a group of grieving women roar in laughter is music to my soul, and often to their own as well. For one such group, the surfing emoji became a signature sign-off in their texts to one another. This week, one of those women said her final farewell to her husband of many decades. She had joined our group over a year ago as a way to find kinship and camaraderie in her role as a longtime caregiver. I don't think she ever believed death would actually come after so many near misses and miraculous recoveries. But this week, it came. Death came calling, and it was his name that was being called. She called me the morning after he died to tell me that as grateful as she feels to have had all these months listening to and laughing with the women in the group as a way to prepare for this day, nothing could ever prepare her for the brutality of the reality of his leaving. We talk about that in our groups. We talk about anticipatory grief and how foolish it is to think we have done the majority of our grief work prior to someone dying just because we knew it was coming. Just because we have watched them in a long, slow, debilitating illness, when the reality is that it had never truly begun. But that clarity only comes in hindsight. This sweet friend has learned so much in the time she spent in the group, and every bit of it will serve her in some way over the upcoming days and weeks and months. She knows that she has a network, a tribe of sisters who have walked alongside her this year, who can now hold the lamp for when her path grows too dark. That was the other thing she wanted to tell me, that she feels unspeakably grateful to have been allowed to come into the folds of a grief group prior to her loss. To have been gifted with the words and stories of these women who walked ahead of her in their own losses, because she feels like she has a leg up on someone who waits until after their loved one dies to find that kind of help. And because in listening, she was learning. In listening, she was making herself aware of the lessons others had learned the hard way in hindsight. Our hindsight became her 2020 vision. She may well find herself questioning aspects of her relationship with him in the upcoming days, but my guess is her list of woulda, coulda, shouldas will be much shorter than most. At least I can hope that it will be. This is Sean Jung. Thank you once again for spending this little bit of time with me. And thank you to everyone who missed me last Sunday when I wasn't here, and to everyone who buys me coffee on the website. I hope you'll join me again where the veil grows thin. Until then, be well, be still, breathe, and laugh. Love, Sean.